It's happening. I've actually said that in real life many times. I'm basically part of the podcast already.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 126 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, sometimes known as Mo Dick, hardly ever, but always known as Morgan Richards.
Check. Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards.
I belong,
bringing you sunshine state of mind.
A pun's give me corona.
Oh, God.
Wow. This week's guest is singer, songwriter, and lovely hair aficionado, Travis Clark of We The Kings.
Yes, and the positive energy from this one is contagious. Travis is a musician I've always admired, and what an inspiration he is to the pop punk world behind the scenes and as We The Kings. For the last 15 years, the band have established themselves with feel-good vibes and emo anthems, and to celebrate such a milestone now, they've recently released a special 6-track EP titled Saga, where every song is influenced by a previous We The Kings album and era. So we invited Travis on to tell us all about the early days of the band, of big haircuts and being shut down by the police, to how being a father has changed his way of life, having such a celebrity status in the States with an insane golf tournament he was a part of, and lending his songwriting genius to other artists, including his work with the queen herself, Avril Lavigne. How mad is that?
Queen Elizabeth?
No.
You did a song with Queen...
No, Avril Lavigne, the queen of emo.
Oh, I didn't hear that bit. You said he's done a song with the queen.
Yes.
And then there was a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, what, Elizabeth... Oh, no, that's awesome. No, yeah, I remember now. Yeah, I was going to say. Imagine he'd written a song on the queen. That'd be terrible time in. Anyway, thank you very much to Travis for coming on. It was a fantastic chat. Yeah, it was just super, super informative. He's a lovely, lovely fella.
It's a treat as well, because he doesn't really do big interviews like this, especially in long form, and open up about the whole back catalogue of the band and everything. So I'm very excited he chose Sapnin, and we're going to have a wonderful time. But before we get into this conversation, just a reminder that if you enjoy what we do and would like even more bonus madness from Sapnin Podcast, please go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Sapnin. Over there, not only do you get involved with a whole host of your new best friends in a wonderful community, but we keep trying to find funny and new content to make you laugh each and every week. So that's patreon.com/Sapnin, and go and follow us on social media at Sapnin Pod.
Yes, that's at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, like Morgan said, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Sapnin, because we've made an unbelievable community. And we're just constantly making content and putting some funny stuff up there. So yeah, check it out, patreon.com/Sapnin. Should we get into this right away?
Yes, let's hear from the brilliant songwriting mind behind We The Kings and so many of your other favourite artists in the scene, Mr. Travis Clark.
Sapnin!
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapnin!
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 Yes!
Wow, yes! Yeah. One of the loudest and longest sapnins we've ever had.
Like
how
it was like a harmony, like sapnin, 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 sapnin!
It was full of energy. I love that. Fair play, Travis.
Thank you.
Fair play.
Me too.
Thank you, thank you.
This week's guest is the fantastic Travis Clark from We The Kings. Guitarist, frontman, keyboardist, all-round good egg. You we are today.
Thank you.
How are you, Travis?
That's a very kind thing to say. I'm fantastic. Like you said, you know, waking up every day is a miracle sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially, I'm over 30 now, and that's a thing for me. So everybody always said, like, hey, it gets tough. After 30, it gets tough, and it's genuinely, it's a thing.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm slightly closer to 40 than I am 30 now as well, so that really hurts me. Every time I wake up, I'm like, oh, I'm neatly dead.
Super old. That's when he starts saying, like, yeah, but 40's the new 10.
Yeah. 40's the new 16. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then 70's the new 4 where you can't walk anymore. And
You need help. That's true. But how are you? How have you been? How's this crazy shit treating you?
It's, you know, I got to be honest. Unfortunately, there is a ton of pain in the world, and people are having genuine problems for a long time. Not just the past week or And so, with that being said, I always want to say this lightly because there has been an incredible silver lining for myself, selfishly, and that is that this is the longest time that we've been home as a band. And I'm a father. I have 3 daughters that are ages 5, 3, and 1. And my wife is pregnant again with our 4th.
Congrats.
So, congratulations.
Thank you. And it's interesting. Like, would that have happened if we weren't stuck in the same, house for, like, would we be pregnant again? Or, it takes A plus B to make that. So...
Wait, what?
Whoa, explain.
Imagine that.
All right, kids, let me explain.
Yeah.
So
you do
so,
what?
Ew, that's gross. So selfishly, the silver lining for me is that I've been able to be home with my daughters, and I've been able to see milestones that I've missed before. Mm-hmm. I've missed birthdays and holidays. I've missed first steps. I've missed first words, and that shit crushes me. It really does, especially when you're out on the road, and the rest of the guys, they're all dads too, so they understand and can empathize with it. So the biggest silver lining for me is that I've had an incredible amount of time that you can't get back. You know, if you miss it, these are things that you can't get back, especially, and they're just, dude, they're my baby girls. Like I am so in love with them, and it totally kind of erases the shit that's going on in the world, because, you know, I'm present with them. I'm just being here, and I enjoy being around them so much that when I think about the last year, like, it's so, there's like no gray area. It's just like so black or so white, and it's either like crushing pain from everything that's happened in the world, because I feel for those people, and then it's like just insane joy from, it's just such a weird feeling of being tugged between both sides. But I also, you know, as far as the band, like, I miss my brothers in the bands, and I miss being on tour. I miss meeting fans and doing what I love to do, which is play music in front of people and seeing people smile and sing along. Like, I definitely miss that, but I do have, I have my vice, which is, you know, being able to be around family.
Yeah.
So it's been just a really interesting roller coaster of, like, I don't know how the fuck to feel because of these things that are going on.
Yeah, but it's, I suppose it's nice that you have the apps, though, like you've got, right, to experience those things with your daughter, and that's awesome, and that's really, really positive.
I mean, it's lovely to hear, because as you said, you know, you've been a band who are constantly on the road, if it's touring different countries and everything, so to have that kind of window and pocket of opportunity to just be home and see those things and catch up on day-to-day life that you might have missed 9 months out of 12, it must just be like a really refreshing experience with everything.
Yeah, and you know, there's no way that, you know, if it were within my power to have erased COVID and erased all this pain that it's caused a lot of people in depression and things like that, I would absolutely erase it. You know, it's not saying that I would rather have this and have people going through this crazy thing. It's just, you know, I think the type of person that I am is that even if I wasn't married with kids, I would still try to find something. You know, maybe it's because I'm able to see my friends and family who I get to meet, or maybe it's just like I have an 18-year-old Chihuahua named Elvis. And
what? 18?
You know, oh yeah, he's literally gonna never die. It's wow. I don't know, it's crazy. But you know, I think just the type of person I am, I would try to find something that makes me grateful for whatever position I'm in. I've always been that way, and sometimes it's annoying for people because they're just like, stop being positive, like just join the negative train, come be sad. And I am, I get sad all the time, but because I'm an emo kid, you know. I'm supposed to.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Well, yeah, welcome to you've just described my world. I am the I am that completely depressed shithead at the moment. But yeah, I'm genuinely happy that there is some happiness, and our listeners will be glad to hear that you've got some positivity, because we've had a mixture of guests on who have, some of them have loved this time, some of them have absolutely hated this time, and you know, and yeah, it's nice to see that when people can find positives in this.
You're like, some people have loved it, some people have hated it, and you're both for some reason.
How'd you manage that?
It's a very political answer. Like, yes, I love it. Yes, I hate it.
saying that, though, it does sound like Elvis ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Oh, Elvis is nothing but a hound dog. Yeah, his last name was just Elvis, and okay, then I rescued him, and I came home. I went out on my first tour. This was even before We the Kings, and I came home, and my mom's or my parents' leather couches that they had just gotten were shredded because he was like trying to crawl up them. So I came back and my parents were like, you owe us new couches because your dog. So he was just looking so cute. He was so happy to see me. And so I named him Elvis Scissorhands. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, he's got, yeah.
Nice.
Class.
Tearing up furniture. Has he destroyed any other furniture since?
No, not really. No. Oh. I mean, he pisses and shits all over the house still at 18, yeah. But what are you going to do? He's 18 years old.
Yeah, there's no teaching him now. If he hasn't got it by now, he's never going to get it. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's mad. Yeah. I've never even heard of an 18-year-old chihuahua. Is that are you the owner of the oldest chihuahua in the world?
No. So I've actually looked this up because I'm just, you know, listen, he's not going to live forever. I know he's going to die, and it's going to be brutal. on me because he was my first, you know, my first child, like my, you know, first thing that I've ever been truly responsible for. And so I started looking up online, like, how long do I get with this thing? You know, and I think there's like, I want to say there's like, a, has been a 30-year-old. Which is truly unreal. And I don't know, like, they can't possibly have been a, like, a healthy 30, like, they would have had to been very old for a very long time. So, you know, I don't want him to be punished for, you know, just being old and not being able to move or eat or whatever. So, but anyways, so if we have this interview, you know, for our, you know, 11th or 12th release, 10 years down the road, then I will let you know if he is now the oldest or then the oldest chihuahua.
That's amazing. Well, I wonder what the oldest current chihuahua is.
Yeah.
It got to be up there. I've literally never heard. I think 16 is the oldest dog I've ever heard of.
Literally, this is what's so good about having a podcast is you have minions that can help us with these things.
That's
so
true,
if you're listening, please let us know what the oldest chihuahua is to date.
Well, I reckon you've got it.
I don't think anyone was expecting chihuahua research.
We're
going
to talk about music. We're like doing homework. I got to like scramble and write this essay.
Chihuahua chat. That's what this is changing to now. Chihuahua hour. I'm starting a new podcast. I'm writing it down.
Brilliant.
But with all that, though, I mean, at the time of recording, we have to say congratulations because today is the release of We the Kings' brand new EP.
Yes.
Thank you for saying that. Already this morning that you've been celebrating by doing some colouring with your daughters. Is that just the perfect father rock and roll celebrations you get to do now?
Yeah, you know what? I woke up and I saw like a bunch of champagne and drugs laying all over the house. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to celebrate that way. I'm going to... No.
Yeah. Excuse me, strippers. Take those drugs and our booze and get out of my house.
My daughters are here. What are you doing here? No, it's something we do every morning. Like... we do like homeschooling with the kids, my wife and I. My wife is the most champion legend person you've ever known, and I'm very lucky to have found somebody that will put up with me, and she's just great. So like I wake up, you know, I was literally woke up and was answering all these emails and getting ready for, you know, this kind of press day, and I just walk out and the girls are just like happy coloring, like listening to our out, you know, the EP Saga. And I was like, oh my god, this is like the best celebration gift is to walk, you know, to walk out and see that. So it felt good, but yeah, we'll celebrate. I don't know what we're going to, you know, we've always celebrated album release or EP releases with the rest of the guys in the band, or we've been out on tour at the moment, or we've been together. So this would be the first release date that we're not all together. So there's a bittersweet there. But you know, in the virtual world, I guess this is what we get.
Yeah. Have you got any plans to see the boys or anything today? Are you going to have a quick Zoom or a phone call?
We have a Zoom. So actually, for everybody that pre-ordered or pre-saved the album or the EP on Spotify, I believe, they entered into like a Zoom contest, but basically the first 500 people are in a Zoom party with us. So it's it's the five of us talking while 500 other people are watching, and I'll play like a couple songs. And so actually a pretty cool event, and I'm sure we'll do it the same way where we each have like our, you know, whiskey and coke here and guitar here, and we'll play it like it's a real stage, but virtually.
Nice. Ooh. That's really cool.
I just worry about timings and stuff like that for things. Like all you need is just one person go, oh, you what? I'm one behind. Oh no.
That would never happen. So we can't do it like that. It will 100% just be me playing acoustically.
Okay.
Like if we did, it would they'd be like, this is the worst band ever. Why did I pre-save this? You know, I don't know if there's anybody that's been able to do that. I was thinking like, do you have like a click track in your ear on your phone that everybody syncs at the same time it plays and then you play, but then everybody's video footage is to, it would be mayhem. Yeah. Absolute mayhem.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, people would be listening going, do you know what? I'm not sure about these Saga remixes. They sound yeah. like they sound like the songs, but they just
yeah. It's exactly. out to beat. The record is better.
yeah. I've noticed that they could get it all together for the record, but I don't know about live. They seem to have completely yeah, dealt by it, one.
Exactly. If this is how they play in the comfort of their own home, I can't imagine that they're you know, any better live. So I'm yeah. never going to go see them.
But I mean, with that, there's so much we kind of want to get into, Trav. But with the EP, of course, you know, there's six new tracks being released with this. But I understand that really in the writing process, you've treated everyone as a kind of representation and refraction on all We the Kings' previous albums and different kind of styles and eras and influences. Obviously, the band's been going for over 15 years now. Was the process quite unique for you to look and see how far you've all come and matured and just differentiated as songwriters and humans over the last decade and a half?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, it was, I didn't expect that roller coaster of emotions. When you go back and so a lot of it as well is like, hey, fans who are just becoming fans of We the Kings, if we do an EP that's kind of almost like a concept album, like there was a conception behind it, it could be cool for these people to be like, oh, it's not just this new album that they're the start of We the Kings. I can go back and listen to, you know, five other albums, whatever it is. So a lot of it was, our way to kind of highlight the fact that we've been lucky enough and fortunate enough to have amazing fans that have kept us around this long and to have been able to make six albums. So part of it was that, but what I didn't expect was going through, you know, when we did the first, second, third, fourth, so the singles, thinking about those albums, you know, I'd go back through my phone and we'd watch like old videos of where the band was there. And for our band, you know, we always hoped that we would have been able to make it, but you know, reality kind of kicks you in the balls sometimes and says like, you know, oh, you can't do it. Or even your close friends are like, you're not going to make it, you know, and it's a weird thing, but we always used it as gasoline. So when we were writing, and we were taking each album, like, I haven't listened to some of those songs, like, properly in years. And I just think about, like, us as kids growing up, you know, dreaming of becoming this type of artist and being an artist that people actually give a shit to come listen to and pay money for, like, an experience to, like, see you guys live and to be a part of that, which was my favorite thing to do as a kid, was to go to live concerts. The only place I ever felt like I fit in. And to think that we could be those people to somebody else was just mind-blowing. So I couldn't have really expected or planned for the fact that, like, I got choked up most of, you know, a lot of the time recording and writing this record, because it was every album that we've ever put out, there's been so much love attached to it that it makes me feel different things listening to each track. And a lot of the songs are written about my personal life. So I'm like literally revisiting those times and trying, you know, for the sake of Saga, trying to really like put myself in my shoes from earlier times so that I can really feel what I was feeling for that record, so that it can be a true reflection of that specific album. So it was a really, really fun concept to put together. And I think especially for the fans that have been with us, you know, from day one, it'll be something that they'll really, I think, appreciate. And be able to hear different things about each song that references each album, but yeah, the biggest thing that I ended up taking from it was just that this incredible process. It kind of not necessarily validates, but it kind of reconfirms that you made it, you did it. And so every time each song that we wrote, we're like, holy shit, like we actually like did it. Like this is like we kept waiting to wake up. And it hasn't happened yet. So just very, very grateful and blessed to have had the career so far that we've had. And we just wanted to put all that same love and affection into this EP Saga.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've noticed online as well, it seems that you've all been a little bit more sentimental with this release in particular, sending a lot of thank you messages to people and writing kind of handwritten
notes about the songs as Instagram posts and everything. I mean, after all this time, what has made you fall in love with making music now for We Are the Kings more than ever before?
Honestly, I think that a big part of it is selfishly, like, as dads, we want, you know, our kids, you know, we all have young kids, but they're not yet, like, really truly old enough to be able to appreciate, you know, what we do. Like, they love singing and dancing to the songs. They don't necessarily understand, like, the level and kind of what we've gone through to make it. So I'd be lying if I said that a goal for us, and I know I speak for the rest of the guys in the band, is to stay relevant long enough so that our kids can come to the show and be like, that's my dad, and be yeah. proud of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we are absolutely going to embarrass them, you know, later on in life, but I'm proud of my parents. You know, my dad did everything for our family. My mom was a saint for making it out alive with me and my brother. And I am proud of who they were. And I know how much that means to them. So if my daughters, I know they're proud of me now, but they are going to be able to express it differently when they grow up. So, a lot of it is to kind of like show our kids, like, listen, everybody told us we couldn't do this. Multiple times we failed, and look what we did. Look what we still did with everything that was coming our way. And I think just the bigger message of why the sentiment is so strong is because we want people to understand, like, you really can do it. And it's different when you become a parent, because you want your kids to, like, dream big, and you want them to chase their dreams. And the best way to lead them that way is to, like, lead by example and show them that we actually did it. So, you know, the sentiment comes from that, but also understanding that, like, the fans of our band are absolutely the sixth member of the band. You know, without each one of the five guys that play on stage, we wouldn't be the band that we are today. And without the fans being that sixth member, we wouldn't be the band that we are today. So they are as much part of this band as myself or any of the guys in the band. Sometimes it takes a little longer to realize how accurate that is. And a lot of artists, unfortunately, I feel like they don't get that, and they don't.
Well, I was going to say,
they don't find that.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, we've had a lot of people, we've done this, you know, this, we've done over 115 episodes or whatever so far, and a lot of people seem, who have been going as long as you guys have, and was going as long as my old band was, and other bands, just seem kind of jaded, kind of even blasé to it, just kind of like, you know, it's just my job right now. But it is so refreshing to see you appreciating it and being thankful for it. Yeah, we get so many people who it just seems like, oh, well, yeah, here we got new album, we did this, blah, 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 and whatever. But yeah, it's so refreshing to see, yeah, your positivity towards it and your appreciation for the support.
I think, honestly, even when it does come to that, you know, if we ever do, I hope that we never feel that way towards music and everything. But I think when it does, I think that's when we are going to call it quits. Because if it's not, like, passionate for us, then what's the point? Hmm. You know, just to make money just feels so slimy. And I, you know, the rest of the guys feel the exact same way. And you can see it, like, when we're on stage, when we're having conversations, when we're on the bus, when we're talking about our music to our friends or band, like, it makes me feel a certain, even in this, like, interview, it makes me feel like a sense of passion and purpose. And that's a big thing. But the minute that we don't feel that, you know, I don't see any point of us going on.
Yeah, lovely. It's really, really lovely to hear. And, like, kind of reflecting on the last decade and a half, I've noticed online you were picking up some really key early memories of the band, from, like, really old photo shoots from the back of vans to even, like, one story about the police shutting you guys down at a really early show in, like, neighbors' basements and garages and stuff like that. I mean, can you just take us back to those days of what that was like starting out and just trying new things?
So we were in middle school and high school at the time, and we did a tour called the Garage Tour, which was basically any of our friends' parents that would let us play in their garage and basically use their electricity, you know, to plug our stuff in. Every single garage show that we played, and we called it a tour, but it was literally, it was the same town, you know, same neighborhoods in a lot of the cases. We got shut down every single time. It was about the third song, fourth song, the concert always come, and we loved it. We're like, how punk rock is this? We're getting shut down. You know, we're like this, you know, this like pop rock act. Like there's literally nothing punk about us, and we're getting shut down by the cops. And what was funny was like, we played in front of the same 15 to 20 people of our friends every single time. Like it was just a different garage. And I can't tell you how awesome it felt. Like we would always start the show inside, like with some, like, you know, holding the guitar up to the amp and getting some feedback. And we bought a fog machine, like a hazer. So we'd turn the fog machine on, the garage would be shut, and then we'd start the feedback, and then the kind of garage would open and the haze would come out. Dude, it was so cool. And then when we would start playing, we realized that like our friends were sitting like in their cars, like down at the end of the driveway, like not even close to us. So we like, there's always just such distance, but they weren't used to going to shows. They didn't really understand like maybe what was supposed to happen. But oddly enough, like I remember every single one of those shows, literally every single one that we played, and we must have done like 8 or 9. And I could recall every moment of that show. And I can't say that about a lot of the shows that we've played, you know, over the past 10 years. There's just something, there's something about like your upcoming and where you started that is really ingrained into your brain, especially when it meant so much to you and so little to everybody else. So that was where we kind of got our touring started. And then we all loved skating. So we would just hit up skate parks and say like, hey, can we come play? And will you let us skate for free? And that was literally like all we wanted to do was skate. So they'd like put us at the bottom of the half pipe, and we'd be playing to people that just were skating, didn't care. But it's funny, man, those times they were just like, we could not have even imagined at that point what the future would hold for us. And that's why it's so special. Like we're just kids that loved music and all wanted to get girlfriends, and that's why we started the band. You know, we just wanted to impress girls and hopefully get a girlfriend. And it's funny, man. You go through your entire career and your entire lives, and year by year your priorities change, and you do things for different reasons as the time goes on. And it's funny to look back and to see like what was important to us at different times. Like that was in the garage tour was, is the hazer working? When it comes up, is it gonna look awesome? Like, you know, Snoop Dogg just pulled up and he opened his car door, and just it's really fun to go back and also to see how awful we were. We were so bad. So bad. You see like the little home recordings, you're just like, this is so bad. And we thought at the time that we were so good, and it's just like the perspective shifts a bunch.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same. Like I'm like all the early shows and shows that I was told, you know, you're never gonna make it, or you're never gonna do anything. It's all those shows I remember, but then all the good ones, all the big ones, I'm like, where have they gone? Where have I forgotten about them?
It's funny. You kind of, I'm gonna use it, you kind of black out on stage when it's a good show.
Yeah, yes. Black out,
yeah. Hey, I had to use one. but you know, a lot of those times you get off stage, you're just like, what just happened? Like, that was really good, but you can't remember the details. It's the earlier ones that were like, oh man, we were so bad, and I remember every note of it. You know, it's funny.
Is there a moment that you like after that you like you remember thinking, oh, maybe this is what's gonna happen? Like maybe, oh, we are gonna make it. Maybe we are. Or right. Is there a moment where you've been like, Jesus Christ, I'm on stage with, I don't know, Freddie Mercury? You weren't, I'm sorry, but like anyone, you know, is there any moments that have really blown your mind where someone that you maybe loved growing up said they like your band or took you on tour?
There are two specific times that come to mind right now. One was the band Switchfoot. I don't know if you guys remember band Switchfoot. It was kind of like a Christian band. I grew up, you know, listening to a lot of Christian music, and they were playing the state fair, which was in our town, and we snuck in after they had sound checked. We snuck in, locked the gate behind us so that they couldn't kick us out. We set up our gear in front of Switchfoot and told everybody that we were the opening band. And for the state fair, it wasn't part of their tour, so for all they know, you know, the fair asked for local kids to come play. We got to play one song before Switchfoot came on, before the tour manager realized that, like, wait, hold on, there's, looking through the contract, there's no opening support acts. And the dudes from Switchfoot, they saw us and they were basically saying, like, we're so sorry that, you know, the event, like, kind of like kicked you guys off, but they were like, but that was really good. You know, can we, do you guys have an album? And we literally gave them a record, and it was a moment of like, okay, like we might have to, you know, fight dirty some of these times to like actually make it. But these guys who we admire and love as a band just said that our song was good. That the one song that we got to play, we can maybe do this. Like, if they think that we're good, maybe other people will think that we're good. So we got kicked out, but our heads were held so high. Like, we were so excited. But it was kind of like in line with everything that we had already done before. Every time we played a garage show, we were getting shut down by the cops. We tried to play a normal show, we're getting shut down by the event. You know, that was one moment. The other moment was Jimmy Eat World is like one of my all-time favorite bands. And
Snap.
So our publisher at the time was Jim Atkins' publisher as well, and he was like, you know, she took me over and was like, do you want to introduce them? And I was like, yes. They just finished playing 23 on soundcheck at Bamboozle, which was like a big event in New Jersey. And he's off stage, like there's a ton of people. Like Jimmy Eat World is one of those bands that it's hard to get to them, not because there's a ton of fans in the way, but because there's a ton of band members in the way and artists that love them. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a better like band's band, you know? So because she has a connection with Jim, she walks me up and I was like, hey, this is Travis. You know, he's one of my other artists. He plays in We the King. And he said, I really like your album. I listened to Check Yes Juliet and Skyway Avenue. He named songs from our album. And she had given him the album, you know, when it had come out. But I mean, you never really know if people are going to listen to it or even if they have time. It doesn't have to mean that they're a dick. It's just, you know, they're busy people. So I was stunned. I couldn't even think of anything to say. I barely said like, hey, I love you guys. You know, like, It was amazing. And I went back from that. Our record had already been out. I should have had that feeling of like, hey, we can do this. And it wasn't until someone that like I just looked up to so much for him to say that. And to like, I looked at him and he meant it. And it was like that moment for me was one of the biggest moments of my life as far as my career as a band. Like that one, I'd never wanted to go home and write more music than after that moment. And those moments have happened at different levels of intensity all through our lives. And I think that's one of the things that keeps you going is having those confirmations that, like, you know, we're really making, you know, when somebody comes up and says like, hey, your music saved my life. I got this tattoo because I was depressed and I was thinking of, you know, ending it all. And then I heard you guys and I saw you guys, and like that shit, it cuts deep because, you know, you realize the responsibility that you have as an artist.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a story.
Yeah, absolutely incredible to hear, and that you had that experience with Jim Atkins and Jimmy World. Like I've said on the
and Jimmy, if you're listening, I still love you, and your music's amazing, and thank you so much for encouraging me.
Yeah, literally. Well, they're one of my personal favorite bands of all time, so I agree with all those sentiments you just said. But one thing I really wanted to pick your brains about, Trav, is your songwriting, because I know you do it for a lot of other people as well, and you've done a lot of collaborations and stuff. But before we get into that, please tell me about writing with Avril Lavigne, because it seems like you guys have just become the best of friends since of it. I know your kids call her Auntie Avril. I mean, tell us how everything went down and what you've been working on with her.
That's amazing.
First of all, if you take that kid that was in the garage playing shows, getting shut down by the cops, and you walk up to him and you're, you know, in your time capsule, and you say, hey, one day, Avril Lavigne is going to ask you to write songs for her.
Wow.
I, you know, so that's what I think about. And honestly, when we had first met, like, it was, it took everything inside of me to, like, keep my cool and, like, just to be calm. Because, and a lot of times I didn't. I would just stop the session and be like, do you realize how fucking cool this is? Like, and I think, you know, I think she appreciated the realness of it. But, you know, her and I connected, like, musically on multiple different things. But we also, like, connected personally. And she's a lovely friend and somebody that... It is so insanely talented. Like, I have voice memos on her phone because when I write, you know, I basically set up like a voice memo session, and that way my stupid brain doesn't forget something genius that comes out from somebody else. And like, even her saying, like, you know, what about this melody? And like, you know, and start singing, and it's pitch perfect. The tone of it's amazing, and it makes you just start thinking, like, man, I'm a bad artist. Like, my voice memos, my voice memos do not sound like that. They always sound like, something, you know, just, and you listen to it, you're like, I can't believe at one point I thought this was decent. So we connected, and she loves my daughter. She loves my wife. Like, we've had such a great relationship together. And, I think part of it is just like, you know, she doesn't demand anything from me and I don't demand anything from her. And we sit in a room and the songs that come out mean something. You know, it's, she's got a ton of songs that are just like, kind of like glitzy pop that are so fun to like, for to be in a crowd for and to dance to, but the sentiment side of it isn't necessarily always there. So to create music after what, you know, when we talked and, you know, we would just talk for hours about her life and about things that were going on, it was truly fascinating. And I was truly interested, because she's had such an amazing career and such an amazing life from an outside perspective that it was cool to see, you know, things happening on the inside. And I remember one of our, you know, like we'd been hanging out probably for 6 months and writing a little bit, and we decided to track one of the songs, and she took me over. Actually, we met at this other house that wasn't hers, and Chad Kroeger from Nickelback opened the door, and I was like, "Is this a what's happening?" Is it, you know, and I knew that they were like in the middle of a divorce, so I just didn't think that they would still like be able to hang out, and you know, like when you hear like divorce, you always hear like, unfortunately, a lot of times it's nasty and thing, you know. So he answered, he's like, "What's up, bro? How you doing?" Like, gave me a hug. I was like, this is the coolest day of my life. I'm going to Avril Lavigne. Chad Kroeger just answered the door. What the hell is happening? Yeah, so then you go back to that kid in the garage in 2000, you know, whatever. And you're like, hey, one day in the future, Chad Kroeger is going to open the door while he welcomes you into his mansion. So it was cool. And we were just sitting on this couch, and we all had kind of like a pen and paper and our phones and writing the song. And it was, to be honest, it was a really, really amazing thing for me. I learned something from every writing session that I've ever done, whether We the Kings is a smaller or bigger artist than the band that I'm writing for. And I think that is one of the things that has helped my writing career, whether it be good or bad, has helped my writer career advance. And I genuinely love sitting with these people and just picking their brain, because music is all opinionated. It really is, you know, and there are good songs and bad songs only by opinion. The same part can sound, for us three sitting on the couch, the same part can sound different, you know, to all three of us as to whether it is good or bad. And that's really important, because when you get into another writing room with somebody else, you have somebody that's like demanding that their part is good. You have to be able to constructively say, like, you know, that's your opinion that it's good, you know? And if the whole room is like, hey, this is really good, then you can basically assume that the group of people or the fans that are listening are probably going to also have a similar opinion that, yes, it is a good song. And I never really thought of songwriting that way. But I think because I've grown as a songwriter, I've been able to have the opportunity to get in different rooms with people who I respect the hell out of. And I'm always nervous. You know, I go in, like, I'm just like, this is going to be the time that I just have absolute, you know, writer's block. Yeah. Can't think of anything. And they're just gonna be like, why do we bring this kid into the room? like I kind of like I welcome the pressure. It feels like, you know, going on stage for the first time, like, you know, it's like Sean, you're like sitting back and like the crowd's ready and like the lights are down, and like that moment is a little nerve-wracking. You know, you want to impress other people, and you want people to really have a good time. And it's the same way in the writer's room. So Avril, I'm very fortunate that I didn't have that meltdown in her session, because she has led me to write with a lot of incredible people and people who I genuinely enjoy writing with. I'm at the point in my life where I'm so lucky. This is the most fortunate I've felt as far as a songwriter, but I actually now can choose to not write with people. You know, if I don't connect with somebody on a personal level, then you know, it's like I don't just want to go and write music. Like it's to me, it's more passionate. So I've been able to say like, hey, yeah, this would be really great for my career to write for this person, but you know, I had a couple bad experiences with him, or my friends have had bad experiences, and that goes a long way. So, you know, I can say like, no, thank you so much. I'm honored, but I'm going to pass on this one. And it doesn't necessarily feel good, like, ah, I got it. It just, you know, it's nice to know that I've been lucky enough to be able to pick and choose, yeah, you know, who I write with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, how did you get into writing for other, like, obviously it's come through We The Kings, but I mean, like, who was the first person that, or artist that reached out and was like, do you fancy writing a song together? And is there anybody that you've written with that we wouldn't expect, maybe?
Ooh. There's a band a long time ago called Care Bears on Fire, and they were
That's the best band name I've ever heard.
A hell of a name.
There are three girls, basically sisters, who absolutely loved the Ramones and Misfits. They were legitimate punk rock girls, and they were like 11, 13, and 14 years old. And they were signed to our label at the time, and our label owner was like, hey, do you want to come in and write for Care Bears on Fire? I was like, that's the best band name I've ever heard. I literally said the same thing. I was like, so with that said, like, yeah, absolutely. And they were so cool, man. I still think about it every once in a while, and it kind of makes me feel like I would love to do that with my daughters, you know, and when they're a little older. So that's an artist that you might not have expected for. I wrote for, you know, basically a 13-year-old punk rock band who were so fun. They were awesome. Nice.
Is this prior to Alexis on Fire? I'm just wondering if there's been any cold cases with the names.
No, this is before, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Take that, yeah. Wade and Co.
Yeah, there you go.
Take that, Dallas.
I think some of the writing opportunities came together through Warped Tour.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Sean, you know, it's like everybody's there. You have a ton of time on your hands, yeah, and some people enjoy writing. Some people, you know, just kind of want to hang out on the bus and enjoy the vacation. But we did a lot of tours with Boys Like Girls and All Time Low and Mayday Parade, and some of the dudes in Mayday Parade, we used to write together. I wrote with the Boys Like Girls guys a lot. Simple Plan was a huge one for me. They actually co-wrote The Light from Saga, the fifth track. And it's incredible. That one, I think, is going to be like the highlight of this EP. And they're incredible writers, and we wrote a lot of music for them, for Simple Plan as well. I don't know. I think it sparked from the Simple Plan, but you know what, to be honest, it's really hard to like say like, hey, like go up to an artist and say like, do you want me to come write? It's like such like an ego thing to say, and I hate doing it. So I don't. And it also kind of like assumes that they can't do it themselves. You know, if I'm saying like, do you guys, you know, so it really has to happen, you know, authentically, where somebody comes up and say, hey, I like your writing style. Do you write for other people? That's always how it starts. Like, do you write with other people? And, you know, luckily enough, you get some people that say that to you, and you say like, yeah, I would love to, you know, I'd love to sit in a room and write. So it starts from there. And then I think it grows by having success in one of those co-written songs, you know. So obviously, you know, some of the greatest writers like of our time are that way because they've had hit after hit after hit. So labels go and say like, hey, we need a hit. Will you write with our artists? And, you know, they do it. So that's kind of how it starts. And we've also, from the beginning of We The Kings, we've co-written with, you know, my favorite people in the world, this guy, Sam Hollander, is a really good friend of mine, and Dave Katz. They co-wrote our first album with us for We the Kings. So I was introduced to co-writing in a really nice light. A lot of people that I know very well have had awful experiences with co-writing and writing for other people or being written for. You just were very lucky that we didn't have that experience. Ours was amazing. We created an album that we still to this day love. It produced Check Yes Juliet, which is the reason that, you know, we're talking right now. Is the reason that we were able to get our band together and to get some, you know, steam to move forward. And Sam, through, you know, more recently he wrote High Hopes for Panic. Like, he has still been cranking out, you know, song after song. And what's nice is basically he's a brother to me, but he's also
absolute mentor to me as a human being and as well as a songwriter. So having people like that in your life, you are able to grow from that. So just very, very fortunate to have had somebody that kind of guided me, like my Mr. Miyagi, but also a brother to me. So that's for me to end what I was saying. That's how I got started, was, you know, sometimes on Warped Tour with just being bored and wanting to write with other people. And then continuing because you have some success in different areas that makes people want to come and say, like, you know, do you want to write more music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I think you're quite lucky that you had the first album, like, co-writing experience, because a lot of bands like myself, like the Blackout, we did like an EP and our first album before we'd like had like a proper producer involved. And then when we got the producer involved and he like we had songs we'd send to him and he's like, yeah, that's cool, but I think that bit you're using at the end, that should be the chorus or whatever. And then all of a sudden, it was our first time of somebody coming in to like helping us write or whatever. So we were very kind of standoffish at first. Like, we were like, who does he think he is coming in and changing our songs? And then we were like, oh, wait, he's sold a million, billion records. He probably does know better than us.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, you end up like, that's the same thing as asking somebody to write for them. You know, like, it's hard to get into it that way because people would just be like, what? I don't need help. You know, like, you're saying our songs aren't good enough, but yeah go on.
And no, I'm just saying, like, I think you're lucky that you had that first album experience because, it took me like two albums to the second album and be like, what? People do this? And then I was like, at first I was kind of offended. Like you said, like, what? My songs are perfect, you fool. And then Jason came along and went, well, if you do it this way, they're better. And I'd listen to it and I'd go, oh, he's right. I'm not happy, but he's right. And I think that really like opened the door for us and myself for wanting to collaborate with people. And it's a good thing. So many people think of it as a negative thing for some reason, and it's just, collaboration is literally probably the key to life. It's the meaning of, we have just worked out the meaning of life live on Sapnin Podcast. Collaboration. We all need to come together and have a bloody good time.
It is, yeah. When you think about it in all other aspects of life, it's absolutely, collaboration is what creates brilliant ideas, and our world is one big collaboration with each other. And you see, when you have good collaborations, good things come from it. When you have bad collaborations, you know, it produces nothing. So, but the same, like, as a band, like, I grew up, you know, or when we started, I just assume that all the artists write for themselves and that's it. So it did still take me, even though we had a good, you know, first experience with it, it kind of took me by surprise learning that, like, oh, a lot of artists don't write just by themselves. They, you know, and I think that's where it comes from. That's why you can be standoffish, because it's a little foreign. You're just not sure if that's what everybody does.
Yeah. So. Yeah, well, yeah, fantastic to hear, because it's something I've always wondered as well, because especially with your songwriting, having so many different kind of subgenres and influences and everything like that. But just a couple of two very quick things, Travis, before you go. Obviously, we've already mentioned some insane moments you've experienced in We the Kings, but surely singing the national anthem for Orlando in the MLS was a little bit of to add to that.
That was awesome. Because
what?
It was,
I didn't even know about this. What?
Yeah. So I've been lucky enough to have not messed up the national anthem.
Nice.
And so teams keep on asking me to come out. So I've done like a professional bull riding event in New York City Times Square. And that was my very first one.
Okay.
And that was wild because there was like cowboys and bulls riding in this dirt circle that was put in the middle of Times Square, New York City. Like, it was a very, very interesting thing. So I did the national anthem there. I did it for the New England Patriots.
Wow.
So basically I sang for Tom Brady.
Basically, there you go. Yeah.
And then, you know, a couple basketball games, a couple other NFL teams. This was my first soccer game or soccer team or soccer national anthem, rather football. I'll use football. and it was amazing. The team didn't end up winning the game, and I'm a big Orlando City fan. So for like a day or maybe a day and a half, I was like, I'm the reason. Had I not sung the national anthem, that would have been it. But you know what came from it? I'm going to tell you guys because I think that you'll appreciate. I don't know who you guys support. So it has nothing to do with the teams that they've played for.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I just joined an 11v11 soccer, you know, co-ed league. A buddy of mine, Will Johnson, who played for Orlando City for 14 or 15 years, is the captain. And he's bringing in a couple other like professional. It seems so unfair that we have some of these people. So Giles Barnes is he's a Jamaican national, plays for Houston Dynamo, amazing soccer player. And then I just found out that Alan Smith from Man U is also on our team.
Nice.
And what? I'm starting. Somehow I'm starting.
Fucking hell, you're Premier League quality. I can't get over it.
I he kept naming the people, and I'm pretty familiar with a lot of footballers, and I was like, this is so unfair to everybody. They're going to get out there, like, they're just looking to get some exercise and, you know, whatever, and our team's going to come out there just
looking for skulls.
Just
we
yes,
want to win every game.
So as like a fan of soccer, I think I'm gonna have to like kind of separate my brain,
yeah,
so that I'm not just watching, you know, like watching them do cool stuff, and I'm gonna try to like separate my brain and be like, okay, you should support him. You should go here, run down the wing, do something like that. So I've always played as a kid and all the way through high school. So it's actually a really, really fun thing. And that kind of came from singing the Orlando City National Anthem, which I'm so grateful for.
Yeah.
What position are you in football, soccer?
Left mid.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm a runner.
Ryan Giggs. Yeah, nice. Who's your favorite soccer player? I can't believe I said soccer.
Honestly, it's Carlos Valderrama.
Nice.
He's a
nice
Colombian national good player. Yep.
Big hair. Very big hair.
Big hair. And I think that's why. But he came and played for the Tampa Bay Mutiny, which is an old MLS club from back in the day. So he was always my all-time favorite, for sure.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Orlando's got Lewis Nani, and I'm a Man United fan, so at least you've got that. But yeah, I wasn't expecting
him. He's an amazing guy. I don't know if you've ever had like the opportunity to meet him, but when I did the national anthem, it was COVID, so it was a little weird, but we were able to like just go in and like during prep time, just a genuinely nice... I don't know why I expect like professional athletes to be terrible people sometimes. He genuinely loves the team and was a genuinely nice person. You can tell like some people like try to put it on or like put on the face of like, yeah, I'm not, but he seemed like a good guy.
Cool. Nice.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting all this connection with all these major sports finances. But yeah, well,
you know what's interesting is that like all musicians, or I'll say a lot of musicians, we admire and are inspired by athletes. Maybe it's because we can't do what they do. And I think athletes are the exact same way. They listen to a ton of music because maybe that's not something that they can do. So even though like I'm a fan of a lot of these people, it's funny thinking that like they're a fan of me as well. Mm. For example, I don't know if you guys follow like baseball, but Ken Griffey Jr. was one of the, you know, Hall of Fame greatest baseball players of our time. And I played a celebrity golf tournament yesterday, and he was there with us, along with other Hall of Famers. And I actually, I, I gotta show it to you. Hold on. Actually. So, because I'm a fangirl of Ken Griffey, I got my mom gave me like a huge box of all my baseball cards that I used to collect as a kid. And I got a rookie Ken Griffey Jr. card.
Wow.
And I asked him to sign it.
Yes.
And I was so nervous when I did it. It was crazy.
Did he like pull out his like We the Kings amateur card?
Wow. Ooh. That's cool.
Unbelievable.
That's really cool.
And so this story only gets crazier.
Have you murdered him and drunk his blood?
That's exactly what I did.
Yes, I knew it. When he said crazy, I was like, I know exactly what he's talking about.
He ends up saying like, yeah, come on. Like, here, love to. So he signs it. And I'm just like, I really appreciate your career. You know, my brother and I were massive fans. And congratulations on everything that you've achieved. And he was like, thanks for saying that. I appreciate it. And then he left. So my partner during the golf game was Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC.
What?
Oh, do you know what? I am sick to the back teeth of being teamed up with him whenever I do a celebrity sports event. It's always one of NSYNC.
It just gets crazy. So Chris Kirkpatrick, he tells me, as Ken Griffey Jr. is walking away, Ken Griffey Jr. is getting in his car, and Chris says, he was like, did you tell him who you were? I was like, of course not. One, I don't do that. Two, there's no fucking way that Ken Griffey Jr. knows who We the Kings is. He's like, oh, come on, man. He runs and tracks down Ken Griffey Jr.'s car. Meanwhile, this is the first time I've ever met Chris. Like, we don't know each other that well. We played golf all day, and we got to know each other. And it was a really great guy. Chasing down another Hall of Fame athlete to tell him who I was mind-blowing.
It's fucking nuts.
He goes and he's like, Griff, just screaming at this like really nice country club. Griffey stops. He rolls down his window. He's like, do you know who that was? And Griffey's like, no. He's like, Chris goes, that wasn't just like, the bag boy. That was, Travis Clark. He sings for a band, We the Kings. He's one of the celebrities that's here. And still, I can't imagine Griffey being like anything other than like, oh, okay, cool. He was nice to me. It wasn't like he like turned me down. So he grabs Griffey's phone and goes into his Spotify app and starts blaring We the Kings from Griffey's car and rolls down all his windows and is like, you better listen to that all the way home, and walks away. Griffey drives away just slamming Check Yes Juliet out of his car. And it was kind of like, it was a roundabout, and then I was so embarrassed, sort of, but I was also like, this might be the coolest thing that's ever happened to me in my life. Like, I just asked my favorite baseball player for an autograph, and now he's just blaring. Like, not even, like, slightly loud, like, hey, that's offensive. We're at a golf course, you're supposed to be, like, quiet. He's just slamming the song.
That's amazing.
And then I found out that his wife is also on our 11v11 soccer team with Alan Smith, because it's co-ed. And so now, like, I'm just praying that I don't show up to the first game, which is on Sunday. I'm praying that I don't show up and like he has something to say to me
about my
crazy friend too.
He's dripping in We the Kings merch. He's like your number one fan.
Because I'm going to wear a Griffey shirt for sure.
That'd be so good. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. This is why we do this podcast. Yeah. It's for stories like that and for stuff.
And it happened yesterday. It was like, it's still like, I'm still super excited about the whole thing.
I was going to say, like, a lot of the times when we ask people to tell us some of these stories, they're like, oh, well, check this out. 10 years ago, I met, whatever. Yours is literally yesterday, and you're still having the best time of your life. Oh, you're so lucky. I love it.
Literally just walking around with this card all day long, just, like, telling strangers, like, do you want to see what I just got yesterday?
You guys like baseball? No. Ah, shit.
I'm going to tell you anyways.
Yeah. What about cards? Do you like red pen?
Exactly. Do you like colors? There's a lot of colors on it.
Yeah. There's so many elements to that story, though. That's unbelievable. But with all that now, Travis, as well, what else can we expect from you, We the Kings, and everything else coming up? I'm sure you're just going to be doing a lot to promote this new EP and the songs and everything, but is there anything else?
I think you mean to ask me what's happening with We the Kings' future.
Yes.
Come on, man, get it together.
It is our brand.
I'll tell you what's happening.
Nice.
Obviously, with the pandemic and everything, we did not receive a single concert offer. That was something that we wanted to do. We did get like a couple that were like drive-in theaters, and even if you don't know who We the Kings are, but you've been to like a festival or a concert, like, you know, like Slam Dunk or something, like you're kind of used to people crawling all over each other, looking like sardines in a can, like can't even move or breathe, but they love it, and screaming at the top of their lungs, which by extension is spitting on everybody. Like, I'm used to that, and that's, it sounds weird to say, but that's what I fell in love with. I fell in love with that version of concerts. So, like, do I want to play a show where people are just kind of in their cars listening? Like, yeah, that could be cool, but when you have the contrast of remembering it for what it was, and hating this pandemic for everything that it's done to people, like, no, I don't want to play that show. Like, and I hope people understand, like, you know, why I'm saying that. It's truly for the love of music that I don't want to do that.
I completely agree. I've started a new band, and we've been offered a few. Do you want to do some live stream gigs and stuff? And I just want people. I miss being about, and it
obviously brings, you know, pure joy for us. So but with all that said, we just got like our first in-person offer, and it's not till the end of the year, so it's in November. Assuming everything is kind of
fingers crossed
back to the new normal or whatever, and it's on a cruise ship, so yes. We are it's like a rock the boat cruise ship, and to make that story even better, you know who one of the bands is? Switchfoot.
Wow. full circle.
It was full circle, and I think that's where we jump off the boat and just die, because we're just like We did a complete circle piece, you know.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you could go, oh, guys, look, we've got two songs now.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe, like, I'll unplug them after one song.
Yes.
So they're doing it. Sister Hazel. Just a couple bands that I remember listening to as a kid. But it's on the Rock the Boat. It's going through like the Bahamas, Dominican Republic, and
nice, very nice.
We literally the money isn't that great, but we were just like, we'll do anything. Like, we'll do anything to play a show the way that we remember being a show. We've never played a cruise, but I've been on cruise ships. I've been where they've had, like, you know, a DJ or even like a talent show or whatever. And there's people that stand next to each other. I was like, I'll take it if they're standing next to each other. And everybody's being safe, and we're able to kind of resemble the show that I remember, then yes. So that's kind of what's happening for us. But we're also with Saga, because it just came out, and it, because of each song representing, you know, a previous album of the six, we wanted essentially to do like a part two to this record. So, you know, it's like Saga is what focusing on the past, and we want the part two to be representative of our present and future. We have some songs that I've already written for it, and they're made. The problem is like, it feels like it takes so long to get your song out.
Yeah.
And I'm like sitting here listening to the songs that I have, and I'm just like, man, I just want to put it out now, but it's not ready, and I haven't been able to like properly track everything, and it sucks, because I can't, like, I can tell people like get excited, but it's not fair to them, because they're going to get excited and have to wait. But I'm genuinely excited for, you know, being able to take advantage of this time, of being home, being able to spend time with my wife and kids, my friends and family that I haven't seen. And then also to be able to sit, like, I don't know if you guys can tell this is my studio. This is where all the magic happens. But I, you know, I come in here and I grab the piano or I grab the guitar and I just sit and I just write and, you know, for hours, and I love doing it. And this is, I'm so comfortable here, and I love, you know, feeling that creative. So that is what the, you know, more music and hopefully, you know, more touring, and we'd obviously love to get back to the UK, especially now that I've kind of, my rite of passage of playing football is kind of being activated right now.
Yeah,
definitely. We've all got to get in some sort of big slam dunky football game at some point.
That'd be amazing. They did it on Warped Tour. That would be huge.
Yeah. Wow. Ben Ray, absolutely. If you're listening.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into that. I'll speak to Ben, the organizer, and see if we can organize some.
Nice.
That'd be fantastic. But yeah, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for giving us your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
I appreciate it. I've
enjoyed every story from this. So thank you so much. And hopefully we can do one of these in person when you come back to the UK eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll try my best to kind of top that story with something like, you know, I got across from, you know, Alan Smith, and I did a diving header. I celebrated with Dom Dwyer and Giles Barnes. Yeah. Ronaldo.
And all of a sudden Babe Ruth reanimated.
While Griffey was sitting side stage with his We the King shirt, just Griffey cheering, go Travis, go.
Big Travis tattooed on him. Be fantastic. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
Yeah. Speak to you soon. Thank you very much. Cheers, boss. Thank you.
You're welcome, guys. Yeah, absolutely. Take care.
Yes, fucking tidy, lovely stuff.
You were very, very excited with that one. It was great to have Travis on. I really, really enjoyed it. We chatted about some things I definitely wasn't expecting to chat about. That's our first Chihuahua chat, I think.
Oh, definitely.
The band name KB is on fire. That was an incredible. What a band name. Like, KB is on fire. I can't work out if it's brutal. Because when I first heard it, I was like, KB is on fire. Oh, that's cutesy. And I thought, oh no, that's the cute, lovable bears engulfed in flames. That's terrible.
I think it's a great metaphor for, because obviously he mentioned that they were quite a young band. So, you know, you're getting rid of that sweetness and you're going punk rock. That's how punk rock you are. You're setting fire to K-Biz, which, it's a bit different.
Or mine called Snap the Transformers. That's what mine would have been called.
Headless Ninja Turtles. What? I don't
know. Oh, nice. Limbless Teenage Ninja Turtles. Limbless. Brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much, Travis. What a chat. What a lovely, lovely chap. And yeah, he's written some absolutely fucking belting songs. So yeah, check out all of the We the King stuff. Yeah, what a chap.
Yeah, well, of course, I had to get some more information about writing with Avril Lavigne, because she is one of my favourite humans to ever exist and one of the guests I hope we have on here on the future. But yeah, Travis was just absolute sweetheart. He couldn't do enough for us. And just to say, if you thought his audio quality changed a little bit, can I give you a little bit of an inside scoop here? He was talking so much to us that his laptop completely crashed when he connected a special microphone, and he had to reconnect for his phone. And he's so good at talking that he knew exactly where he left off in his story, so we just kind of took it from there. But an absolute sweetheart, can't thank him enough. I've only ever been able to meet him and see We the Kings once at Slam Dunk Festival back in about 2017. And one of the things I admire most from this set is, like, obviously We the Kings have got loads of mega hits, loads of radio hits, especially in the States, but Check Yes Juliet is that kind of next level, right? It's one of those songs that you put on any nightclub and people are going to go insane in the emo universe. So they started their set with that, which is a ballsy move. And they got everyone.
Did they end their set with it as well?
They did.
Did they? Yeah. Of course they fucking did, because they're geniuses. That's exactly what I would have done. Brilliant. Yeah, imagine if you're a dickhead who only came to see that song, right? And they play that song and you're like, right, done now, and I'm off. Like, no, you fucking idiot. It's an only set of hits. And then they're going to do it again. It's going to be fever pitch the second time you do it, man.
It was it was absolutely incredible. And hopefully we can go back to a We the King show when they're able to come back to UK nice and safely as well. And the last thing from this I want to mention is the fact that he's such a big deal that not only does he get invited to participate in celebrity golf tournaments and all these wacky things, but his partner was Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC. The man is an Eminem lyric.
Oh, that's very good. Morgan, that is... Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 126, where Morgan has said his best thing yet. Brilliant. And for anyone worried, I don't have coronavirus, and I have had a negative check. It's good. Just a bad cold, and it's on its way out. But Morgan, that was... The best Morgan Richards quote so far, I think.
Yeah, well,
the man is an Eminem lyric. Well, get in touch with Christopher, however, something Patrick, right? Christopher Patrick, right?
Yeah.
And tell him you want to make a t-shirt saying, I'm an Eminem lyric.
Oh, he's definitely, should cash in on that. But yeah, it's just wonderful to see everything Travis is up to. And of course, We the King's new EP, Saga, is available now. 6 new tracks, all inspired by different eras of the band. So go and check that out. And while you're online checking things out, go and give us a follow and a message at Sapmin Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and send us some more Eminem lyrics. Who is an Eminem lyric? Tell us. We'll try and make this a game.
At Sapmin Pod, at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, if you've enjoyed any of our episodes, if this is your first time listening and you're a We the Kings fan, thank you very much. We love We the Kings too. Go back and check out some of our other episodes. We're bound to have had somebody on you like, and I bet you enjoy it. And if you do, you've got to sign up to our Patreon. So patreon.com/sapnin, where there's a whole array of treats and audio and visual feasts for the eyes and the ears. Yeah.
There is.
So yeah, patreon.com/sapnin. Join our fantastic, fantastic community of legends.
Yes, and speaking of those fantastic community of legends, if you go to the description of this episode, there's loads of names from them that we would like to thank. But Sean, like he does every week, is now going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. Those are the top tiers. Sometimes they change their names, sometimes they try and make a joke. Let's see what they have done this week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Honestly, now, thank you very, very, very much to everybody who's part of the Patreon, being part of the Patreon. If you're considering it, get a bloody move on, will you? but yeah, these people, thank you very, very much. Thank you very much to Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwaway, Mikey McDonald's, McMuffin Buns, Janelle Caston, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Kelly Young, Dilly Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw, Liam Connolly, Scooby Drew Styles, Paul Hirschfield, Kelly Irwin, Kat Besson, Sammy G, Amadine Urbano, Shani Meyer, Boxel Anderson, Tony Michael, Sarah, I'm Getting Fucking Old James, Happy Birthday for the Other Day, Justin Dunn, Amy Campion, Murray Grimwood, Johnny Phillips, he doesn't listen, Scott Jones, Tom Fuck Mash Potato Owen, Dan Gies, TJ Was Forrest Gump's password, One Forrest One Ambler Shardock. He still hasn't changed his name, but congratulations on the new job. Kate Stevenson, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Emily Senegals, Danny Eden, Becky Andy, Lucy Diaz, John and Emma, Martina McManus, Louis Cook, Jenny Robinson, Marcy Jacobson, Sharifa Wadali, Jason Heredia, Caroline Robinson, Craig Harris, Carl Pendlebury, Kevin Clark, James McNaught, Kelly Cannon, Livy Cropper, Stuart McNaught, Lydia Henderson, Chris Howard. All who we need to come up with fun themes again, Amy's very correct. Josh on a diet, on a fucking diet crisp. Thank you very much, Alice Wood, Adam King of the Ghost Parcel, Keris Andrews, Simon Amos, and last but no means least, Connor Lewins and family. Thank you very, very much to all of those people there. You are literally legends in our eyes, and we appreciate you more than we can show you.
Yes, we love every single one of you. You mean the world to us, and you help us keep this thing going each and every week. So thank you from the bottom of our little dark emo hearts. With all that being said, this week we've spent some time recording some extra Patreon bonus content for people to check out in the coming weeks, and we've done a lot of Skypes one-to-one with some of the Patreon people as well. So if you'd like to get involved and get some of that sweet Sapnin goodness, head over to patreon.com/Sapnin. It's been another great episode, Sean. I've enjoyed this quite a lot. Is there anything else you would like to mention, say, promote, joke about before we stop recording?
This comes out on Friday. Apparently last night I was on the Rock the Week game show. Check that out on the Heavy Network. That's twitch.tv/TheHeavyNetwork. I was on that. Hopefully I won. Me and John won. And Tasman has to shave a head. I don't think that's the rule, but I'm trying to make it. That's what I'm going to go for.
Well, now you've said it, you've put it out there in the universe, and we can see what happens there.
Yeah, but I put it out there after the fact has happened, haven't I?
You have, but then if you have won, she still has to do it then.
Well, she doesn't. Well, I don't know. It depends. I don't know what the forfeit is. I'm just hoping it's shaving heads.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because imagine if... think of it. It's two people who definitely don't want to lose their hair. It's John Mahon and Tasman. So, anyway, yeah, check that out. Also, I'm in a band. Check Raiders UK wherever you listen to music. At Raiders Band UK on the socials, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that lovely stuff. And yeah, just thank you for listening to this. If you've got this far, please let me know. Hashtag I got this far. There you go. That'll do. I don't think anybody will. But thank you very much. I love you very, very much. I know Morgan does. Morgan, you've had a fantastic week this week because we've spoken to someone you very, very, very much love. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then you came up with that fucking corker there at the end. So that's fucking brilliant. Well done to you, Morgan. Getting stronger. Morgan is getting stronger.
Getting a natural fist now, just 126 weeks after the fact we started. But shout out to Avril Lavigne and Chris Kirkpatrick if you are listening. If either of you are, please DM me on my social media accounts at @MHRichards_ on Twitter. Why? And Instagram.
Why? Just get in touch with the fucking pod, follow the podcast.
Well, yeah, that too, but I would like a conversation with Avril Lavigne and Chris Kirkpatrick and then get him on the podcast.
Well, you can't do that via the podcast.
Yeah, I know, but if they follow me as well, then that's even cooler, isn't it?
You just want to plug your own shit.
That too, but I do want to be best friends with Avril Lavigne. So Avril, if you're listening, I love you very much.
Yeah, don't we fuck it all. Let's be best friends.
But besides that, we'll see you next Friday and every Friday for another brilliant episode of the Sapnin Podcast with an unexpected guest and good laughs. So until then, to steal a line from Sean, please never die. And
what am I going to say now, Anne?
Well,
what am I going to say now? Well,
you pick something. This is the last sentence. This is the last sentence of the episode. Pick something to say.
He said that we're going to be here for each and every Friday, and ultimately that's a lie, innit? At some point.
Nah.
We're not.
If we record enough episodes in advance, we can.
Well, we can go forever.
We can broadcast from the grave.
Sapnin from below. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's gone morbid. Sapnin! Fucking hell. We've lost the plot, man.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.